afternoon. Today is Monday, July the 8th, 192nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Gary Eagles. Hey, Gary.
Hey, happy summer, Brian.
It's summer.
It's summer.
And you're wearing my color.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, camel.
Well, if I can't be on the beach, I might as well wear a color that looks like
I. Yeah, yeah. Looks like you blend in, huh? Yeah, camel for the beach. Good. You're getting a new roof.
We are. Well, you know, those facilities are worth a little bit of money, and our contractor said that if we didn't make attention to it, we either do that or buy buckets this next winter.
So oh, really? Had it gotten to that point?
It was very close to that.
Had you roofed it since it became yours instead of the city schools?
It was roofed in 1976, and so we got our lifespan out of it. We've remodeled the inside, and he says, you know, we did such really good work on the inside, it would be a shame to have that ceiling water spotted. So now we're taking care of the outside.
So that explains then the slate roofing?
That's oh, yeah, on. Don't I wish. Yeah, we took out all the slate out of the classrooms and put it on the roof.
Yeah. Yeah. Good, you picked up on that one quicker than I thought.
Did.
It's not summer all the time for Mr. Eagles. Now, this afternoon we'll spend a little bit of time talking about the funding as, at least this, at the start of the year, everything looks like it's somewhat known. And also some of the new curriculum, some of the challenges that are out there, pluses and minuses when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of The Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Time 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from George Washington.
I remember him.
That guy.
That George.
Yes. The basis of our political system is the right of the people to make and to alter their constitutions of government. A little something for Egypt.
Well, it's some very tragic things going on. I mean, maybe change was necessary, but the type of change that's coming down is most unfortunate for the people getting caught up in it.
Yeah. I you know what was impressive for me? Protest of 40% of the population. That's impressive.
You like the involvement.
Just, yeah. Either they're really hacked off or they had nothing better to do that night. Mm-hmm. I think it's the motivated. We couldn't get that many people to do anything if we absolutely positively had to.
You know, and as an elected official, Brian, that actually does bother me too in terms of the apathy that so many of our people here in America show toward our political system and the very small percentage of registered voters that actually get out. I mean, first of all, not everybody registers to vote, and then to have just a small percentage of those actually show up at the polls on a routine basis. But what further amazes me is that when actually somebody wants to run for office and their track record of not going themselves to the poll becomes noted, then you go, wait a minute, how come you're just now suddenly interested in politics?
Let's connect the dots, shall we?
But it does frustrate me because that is the vehicle by which we have the opportunity to shape our future.
So who's running against you this cycle?
Well, actually, the election for my office doesn't occur until next June. So we'll see if anybody decides to announce whether they're running. Will probably occur sometime around September, October, November at the latest.
Sapper, hanger. Oh.
I don't think my core group will. Well, they may surprise me. But I'll tell you, one thing nice about having elections is the debate and discussion that occurs. And I, for one, am very proud to be an American and have transitions that we have in our political systems without the upheaval that we were just talking about in Egypt. That's most unfortunate.
With an elected, it's certainly more challenging to have the escape plan in place. Do you?
You know, I have not thought about and came to a decision about whether or not I'll run another term. I have been very proud to serve 11 going on 12 years as county superintendent. And then, of course, I worked side by side with my predecessor, Louis Bucher, when he was county superintendent for 19 of the 20 years that he served in that capacity. So I have very much appreciated and enjoyed my opportunities. There are some exciting things on the horizon, which entice me to stay. And but I've had a number of people ask me, well, are you going to run again? So I will be making that decision toward the end of the summer and making an announcement. If I feel that I can continue to contribute to the school system here locally, to our children and our future, then I might want to hang around a little while longer. Then again, people may or may not want to support me in that
decision. This may not be your decision, Kimasabi.
Well, to run will be to whether or not they see me in that role. Well, again, their decision, I just hope to get to the polls.
I think I would be tempted if I ever became an elected, would be to kind of handpick the successor, groom, and then midterm go out. To allow that transition, mm-hmm. not to worry about the legacy of the incumbent, because that never happens, but to allow somebody who may not be the prettiest, who may not be the most well-spoken, who may not be the one that's the darling of the political machines for fundraising and things mm-hmm. like that, to be able to kind of get their feet wet and at least continue the general direction with fine-tuning, obviously. Mm-hmm. And establish a track record in that position prior to going through the election cycle.
Well, it is true that if I were to run again and instead of sitting around for all 4 years, say, do two, and then tell the County Board of Education that I'm going to take early retirement, it then would be their opportunity to actually appoint an interim person for the remainder of the term. Here's what I've said, though, about in terms of the future. I just hope whenever I do leave, that three things are accomplished. One is that the majority of our customers, be it our school districts and parents in the community, if they feel we're moving in the right direction. Number two, if I have a strong team that's left, that's in place. And number three, that I've left it in as fiscally good shape as possible so that the next person come in has a reputation to build on. I do expect changes to occur. But I hope that I'm able to leave the County Office of Education in the situation in which people want to continue to move along in the kind of direction we're moving. Where I would consider it to be a failure is if I have somebody running against me that wants to throw everything out and start all over again because we're not doing what we should be doing. That would bother me.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. Recently, the Eureka Heritage Society named Bill Hole its Preservationist of the Year. For 17 years, he's led the renowned Historic Preservation and Restoration Technology Program at College of the Redwoods. Now, however, he's been told the college may not be able to afford to offer his classes next school year. While the program has a shortfall based solely on enrollment, Mr. Hole says that's not the full story. It's brought in more money than it costs to run, over $1 million from donated supplies, equipment and training sites, state grants and training agreements. He adds, "The type of training we do, integrating construction, rebuilding, and revitalizing neighborhoods, is significant to Humboldt County. The intensive hands-on training prepares his students to fill the demand for specialists to work on restorations locally and throughout the country. See, our administrators should take off their green eye shades and see the big picture. This program is a valuable asset to our economy and culture." Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit association dedicated to the betterment of our communities.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 4:23. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. Gary, looking at the state budget, I don't know if it's rose-colored glasses or what the color glasses are that make it look the best. From the educational perspective, it seems as if education did okay.
Well, certainly a lot better than we've done in recent years, Brian. That's absolutely true.
So is this a change of attitude at the state level, or is it a deprioritizing of other areas? Because the economy really hasn't kicked up.
Modestly, it has, but certainly not as robust as we'd all like to see. Two things. The Proposition 30 that passed in November is resulting in more money coming into the state coffers. Property values are stabilizing and on the increase. Real estate sales are going up.
Starting to happen, yeah.
Yeah. There's been a decline in the numbers of individuals looking for jobs. In other words, there's an incline in employment. So you put those things together and we're turning the right corner. Now, here's the thing. After being cut so severely in the last 4 to 5 years, anything, even just stop the bleeding, would have looked very good to education. But I have to say two things have happened. One is because the state's fiscal budget has stabilized and much of the deficit spending has been reduced, that means they don't have to lean on education to borrow more money or not take it away from us. So part of their strategy in the past has been to defer payments made to schools, which means money that should have been paid this year isn't paid until the subsequent year. The governor has said for 3 years now he wanted to reverse that trend, and this is the first year coming up in which he's actually reversing that trend and buying back some of the deferrals.
Is it sustainable?
Well, what it does, it was a one-time savings when the state implemented every one of those deferrals. As they pay them on time, it becomes a one-time added expense that they get credit for, but it truly only one time to the extent that they buy back those deferrals. You see headlines of multiple billions of dollars for education in the state of California. It sounds like a lot of money. And it certainly is in one respect.
From this chair?
But we have 6.3 million kids in the state of California. So it doesn't take much new money per child to add up very quickly. But a lot of that new money is not really new and ongoing. It's one time for the deferral payback. There are, however, under the new philosophy of funding schools, there are some of our schools that are actually going to see some real money. And when I say real money, I'm talking about potentially 3%, 4% more money. Now, you're going to say, God, how does that compare to the past? Well, again, the last few years, not only have we not gotten a COLA, we've also lost money. Now, there have been peaks in my career that I've been in education of 8, 10, 12% new money in year over year. Well, I don't think we're ever going to see those times again. But
that sounds like the insurance company.
Well, it does. And those returns you just can't sustain. But 2, 3, 4% more money, that can help.
You can plink along with that. Well, as long as the economy is doing stuff.
As long as the economy does something, yes. Because what that allows you to do is, you know, pay the increased cost of gas and health benefits, salary increases, those kinds of things over time.
How are you anticipating this year? You mentioned the health benefits. I was thinking along those lines, too. How are you projecting the impacts of Obamacare at the first of the year? Do you know yet?
Or no, we don't.
Just have a dollar and you're hoping that that's enough?
Our self-funded JPA program raised its rates on the health program side a little over 5.2%. But to be honest with you, that was one of the lowest raises year over year that we've experienced because historically, it's been in the range of more like 9% a year.
Which still sounds a whole lot better than many.
Well, you know. We had a year, and this goes back several years ago, but we had a year in which a year over year was 30% increase in health benefits. You talk about
we've not touched that level.
Spiraling impact on budget. But, but fortunately, I think under our self-managed program, we've been able to keep the costs down. However, You look at taking your health benefits and increasing them by 9%, and yet you don't get new revenue, you know. And look at your business. If your sales revenue wasn't going, where would you go? Well, you'd have to reduce. And unfortunately, some of our school districts either had to transfer the cost to employees or reduce benefits or eliminate positions in order to just fund benefits. So again, 2-3% is going to be beneficial. What's also going to be beneficial under the governor's new plan that the legislature approved, I'll say 80% of, is what they call local control funding formula. It is going to give school district boards of education and local communities more say-so in how to spend money. That's a plus. The other advantage that's coming down the pike is that the way in which money will flow, the more students a district has that are low income or that do not speak English as their native language or are foster youth, those districts will get more revenue. And that's because research shows that those specialized populations require a higher investment of resources to make up for what they may not otherwise have in their home situations or in their other educational opportunities.
So foster kids.
Foster kids are included. Absolutely. We have, as a system of education and social services in this state, have paid much more attention to foster youth in the last 5 or 6 years than we've ever done, and it's about time. Foster youth get lost, and when you look at a segment of our student population who drops out of school or is potentially more subject to lifelong leaning on welfare than anything else, you find that the foster youth do.
Yeah, disenfranchisement.
And that's because of how life, their life struggles have caused them to really not have the foundation they need. So this governor recognizes that they need a little bit more investment to deal with some of their issues in school.
So to be totally crass, how much more is a foster kid worth than a non-foster kid?
Well, for every foster youth you have, you'll get a 30% increase over your base for that child. So if your base is $6,000, you get 30%, you get $1,800 more.
That's enough to do something for them then.
Yes.
That's where I was getting to.
Yes.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
You want hot buys on furniture and appliances? You've got them during Burns Furniture's July Hot Buy Savings Event. Choose your new 7-piece living room group starting at just $899.95. In Burns Sleep Center, the new Serta Eye Comfort mattresses are the latest innovation. Or select your Englander mattress set in twin to king sizes. All with free local delivery and easy financing options. Hot buys on furniture and appliances during July at Burns Furniture, 5th and G Streets in downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:34. Got things all crisscrossed. That is a 4. That's a 5. Jeez, the microphone just kind of blends in for me.
Hey, time flies, particularly when you're with me, Brian.
Yeah, boy, does it. Woohoo. Here, looking at the numbers here that came out of the state for the anticipated funding that you've got. Okay. Good, bad, and different. It is kind of what it is at this time of the year. Were there winners and losers in the local schools for this budget cycle, or did everybody pretty much hold water and some are now able to hold a little bit more water?
Actually, I like the way you just phrased it. Everybody was guaranteed not to take less money next year than what they currently have, and everybody was guaranteed to have a small amount of new revenue at least. So I would say that worst case scenario is that a district would – year over year, probably get about 1.6 to 1.8% new revenue. Those that are on the better side of the scale might have anywhere from 4 to 5%, maybe even just a little bit more than that when it plays out. But again, right now, a lot of these are still preliminary assumptions based on some data that the districts developed during the springtime. My office is now working with local districts to get hard and fast figures on the number of children that they actually can confirm are in socioeconomic strata or are foster youth or whatever have you, these categories. We will be working with the California Department of Education and the Department of Finance to, you know, run the numbers to make sure all three entities agree that, yes, these are the dollars that our districts are going to get. Were there losers? Well, if you look out 7, 8, 10 years from now, yes. But comparatively so. But I would also assert to you that the current methodology, or the methodology, I should say, that has been used for the last 40 years up until now, has created winners and losers as well. So anytime you monkey with a system, somebody's going to benefit, somebody isn't. I think you need to step back, and that when we had to do this as the governor was rolling out his local control funding formula plan, and say, does the plan principle make sense? And that is, give local districts more control, give districts that have high concentrations of these specialized populations a little bit more resource so that they can do something effectively with that, so that they can close the achievement gap, so that they can raise the boat for everybody, as it were. And yes, those principles hold true.
Well, now we've talked over the years that if they just gave you the bag of money and ran out of town,
it would be helpful.
That you would have the abilities to do some things and get a higher end result than what you do with some of the categorical funding.
Yes, I firmly believe that, yes.
Does this, even for those schools that didn't win as much as the others, because of that flexibility, did they really win more than what the raw dollar sign shows?
Yes, absolutely, Brian. And that's one of the reasons why I was very supportive this last spring of the governor's new approach. Even though I knew that of the 31 local school districts that we had, some would get a little bit more than others under the new way of doing business, I just believed it was a better way of doing business. And in particular, because of the ability for local school boards, administrators, staffs, and communities to come together and make decisions. What's interesting, though, is during the legislative discussions in the last couple of months, March through April and May, leading up to the June resolution of the budget, there were still a lot of specialized constituent groups down there that wanted to maintain the old-fashioned categorical restricted programming. And unfortunately, many of those voices were loud enough to where what the governor actually got from the legislature was not quite as much flexibility as what even he had proposed back in January. But it's still better than it has been in the past.
How did charter schools make out with this? Certainly there's been a huge shift over the last 10 years into the charter district, charter school approach. Did that muck this thing up at all, or are they kind of treated just as another educational institution?
I actually think they benefited overall in this new approach because they get put on a more equal keel to what a school district would have as revenues. Yes, they've had more flexibility in the past with what they can do. They've had the opportunity to be excused from a lot of the education code provisions. I don't believe all the charters that I've seen out there in the state of California have been successful, but many have been. And I do believe that some of the financial drawbacks and challenges that they've experienced will get corrected over time because the state is going to be enrolling them in the same methodology of local control funding formula. So, yes, I think there were more winners than losers throughout the K-12 education system here.
Other than the most obvious first-level stuff, if Humboldt County's employment went up, let's say another 5,000 employed. So we got kids, the schools are populated again. Mm-hmm. Would that change the dollars much, other than you would have more D's in your ADA and get that number? Would anything else change, or is it just purely now a factor of number of kids equal number of dollars?
Well, it's number of kids and then the types of kids. The more challenging those populations, don't forget that you get a little additional revenue. But here's the benefit of having more job opportunities for local youth. And that is some of the transition programs that the youth employment programs that we've been operating for many years, very successfully over the years, for high school students, we have not hit our desired targets for employability for those kids over the last 4 or 5 years because of the local economy. Even with some of the placements of putting kids into training programs, we've not had as many training opportunities because of employers' challenges. So I certainly do hope that the employment picture improves, not only because it will give our young people more opportunity to stay here locally, and remain part of the community. But also it will open up training opportunities and mentorship opportunities that we've actually lost over the last few years.
KINS, News and Information Times, 343. We'll be back with more from Gary Eagles.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. Gary, off the dollars for a little bit. Curriculum this time of the year certainly is something people are looking forward to. I almost asked the kid if he had a summer reading assignment, but checked off. I mean, he's a, I don't think too many seniors in college have that. But I remember that was part of the cool thing that the kids would look forward to is what the book was that was going to be assigned during the summertime for the reading purposes. Curriculum, obviously, is something that's always evolving, always changing. Do the boards still have the authority to set the curriculum for their school districts, or is the state now pretty much usurped that?
Well, actually, with the emergence of the National Common Core Standards movement, there's actually more opportunity for local school district boards and their school staffs to actually design a more flexible curriculum. Now, the standards themselves emphasize deeper, richer curriculum rather than breadth. They emphasize student collaboration, critical thinking, communication, creativity. And I do believe that what we're going to see as the Common Core rolls out is that a great deal more flexibility and creativity on the part of staffs to address that. I think you're going to see more project-based learning activities and, as I said, more collaborative efforts among groups of students. Because the whole concept now is, how do we best prepare kids for both college and or career when they leave high school? And a famous phrase, at least it's becoming more common anyway, out there now is, if you can Google it, don't bother testing it. And don't put it under the end of course exam. It's not so much
calculators, huh?
Well, yeah, it's not so much that can you quote what happened on a given day in a given year and a given place in this world. It's what can you do with the information that you have? How do you know the information you have is valid? How do you go about testing its authenticity and its reliability? Those are the kinds of things that we're preparing students for in the future, and the new Common Core moves in that direction. It's very exciting.
Well, we were arguing that one 25 years ago. It's not the information, it's what do you do when you get it now.
Yes.
It's even, you know, how do you ferret out and edit down the information so you know what's real and what isn't.
And what you can really use and rely upon, absolutely. And that's has to be part of our core curriculum as we're helping to prepare students for adulthood in this high-tech world of the 21st century.
So as you are looking at the curriculum, do the teachers have any flexibility anymore to select, let's say if I'm an English lit teacher, what stories we're going to read this year in English 11?
I do believe we're going to have more flexibility to get to it because the types of testing as well as the standards for the curriculum that are coming down. Again, when you're trying to emphasize critical thinking or critical reading skills, it's irrespective of the text that you might read. It's how do you read and extract the information and relevant facts.
The processing of the information.
Yes, and I think that the teachers will be able to use a much broader variety of material to bring to their students in order to engage student learning better, in order to individualize learning better.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, and we'll see you again soon.
Summertime.
Yes, indeed.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.